Good morning and welcome to Grief Talk Cafe. I'm Darlene Rempel. I'm going to be your host today. We're just happy for you to join us. We're Grief Talk is about lessons learned through life and loss. So we're excited for you to grab your coffee and join us today. We have a very special guest and we're really excited to be introducing Stories That Heal. And so we've done podcasts on lots of different things, but we love when people can share their stories and that we can learn from stories. And so we've been sharing, Jennifer and I have been sharing our stories, and now we have a guest, amazing guest, who's going to share her stories about healing. So we're going to just go right into it. So again, invite a friend, share our podcasts, and we're going to start with a story. So our guest is Monica Klein. And she's had 30 years of real life hands-on experience in branding, marketing, sales, and public relations. She's traveled over 48 countries and she has had lots of experience with people, but we're going to listen to Monica share about her heart today and just about losses and how she's found healing in her life. So I love Monica's motto is you must always be evolving to remain relevant. So we're excited to introduce Monica and she's going to share more about herself. Maybe she'll just start with an introduction. So Monica, welcome to Grief Talk Cafe.
Hi, Darlene. So happy to be here. It's, you know, what you guys do is so important in this world. And I did get a little, like, my heartstrings were pulled when I met you and Jennifer, and I was like, oh, I need to get to know these ladies. Your work is just, it brings tears to my eyes with what you both do. So I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. Having lived it, been there, I know how challenging it can be. So
thank you so much. Thank you. Monica, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, okay, you opened with, you know, a little bit about what I do for business, but I know today we want to really touch more on the matters of the heart and loss and everything that comes with loss. And I don't like to admit that I've kind of become an expert in this topic. It's very difficult. I still get really emotional, although it's been years. And there's been so much that has happened. You know, I am a thriving business owner. I'm an entrepreneur and I've had a business for 13 years now. So I feel like I have really climbed the corporate ladder, hit that glass ceiling, if you will, and then went out on my own. And when you launch a business, I mean, you understand like how much goes into it and how challenging it can be. Let alone if you're dealing with personal grief, loss, trauma, all of that just magnetize what's really happening. So I'll go back to the early days of opening my business. I had a best friend. She was a beautiful, beautiful soul. And she and I we met through work and we were working for different companies and we had a lot of similar clients. And she and I had always had a dream of opening our own business together and being business partners. And fast forward, I ended up moving from Los Angeles to New York City and she stayed in LA and we would just talk on the phone and we would have these conversations about what the business would look like, who would handle what. And her husband was our number one fan. He was like, you two ladies have to do this. Between the two of you, like you will have an amazingly successful business. You will make an impact in the world. You will do it the right way because we had both saw how not to do things, if you will. And so we started to put a little bit of a business plan together, if you will. Like I'm completely structured. I need a business plan. And I really wanted to launch properly. I wanted to have this vision put into place. At that time, she started to get sick and she did not let me know the extreme amount of pain and suffering she was under. She had a very, very rare heart condition. I can't even pronounce it to this day. And unfortunately, right after I did launch the business, she passed and I saw her about 2 weeks before she passed away. And she was such a different person and I'll never forget going through the illness, and she kept telling me, I'm going to get myself back and we're going to do this. We're going to conquer the world. We're going to do all of these great things. And I'll never forget the morning I woke up and I got a message from her husband saying that we had lost her. Within an hour of that message coming in, my son, I have a grown son, and he called me, and my son is very calm and cool. He called me. And so my best friend, Tammy, her daughter was very good friends with my son. So I thought my son had spoken to Alana, and it wasn't the case. And my son was hysterical. And he just kept saying, his best friend's name was Matt. My son is also Matt. And he just kept saying, he's like, he died. And I'm like, stop. What are you talking about? I'm like, did you talk to Alana? I thought he was talking about my best friend who had just passed that evening before. And then he calmed down and he was able to get the words out. And he said, he fell on the subway track. We all live in New York City, and he died on the subway track. And so it was the tragedy for both of us. And at that point I went into mama bear mode, and I just and consoled him. And I never really got to mourn the loss of my girlfriend, because I'm so aware of my son's feelings. Like, I was feeling his feelings. Obviously it was a loss for both of us on both cases. At that point, my mom had just, she was in remission for about 2.5-3 years at that point. And we had celebrated that the cancer was gone. She had battled cancer, dealt with chemo, and she had been in remission. And we really thought she was doing all the right things. And we really thought she had a fighting chance to overcome. And it was about a month after Tammy and Matt died that my mom got re-diagnosed. And this time it had spread. It was in the lymph nodes, and it was traveled everywhere. And because it was a female type of cancer, I took the liberty. I did have some early signs that I could have had some problems. So I took the liberty of going in for a hysterectomy, which, only having one son, I'm like, do I really want more kids? I'm at an age where I will have more children. You know, I'm in my early 40s. Mid-40s at this point. I'm like, I'm probably not going to have any more kids. So I went in and had a hysterectomy. So that in itself is like another loss, if you will. As a woman, you're dealing with, you know, losing your reproductive organs, and it's just so the finality of it, and healing from a hysterectomy. And as I was healing, I was talking to my mom, and she's like, I'm so glad you did that, because female types of cancer run in my mom's side of the family. And I had not lost, to this day, I've lost three of my aunts, three of my mom's sisters, and then my mom. So I went deep into healing and into health. And I've done like BRCA test, which is to see if you're predetermined for cancer and things of that nature. And fortunately, I'm not, but I also, you know, had the surgery so that they would eliminate my chances, lessen my chances of the types of cancer if I was predetermined. But the tests that they do today, if you have the ability to do them, it gives you peace of mind. That gives you peace of mind, right? And I'm like, so fast forward, I'm going back and forth between New York and LA to help care for my mom. My dad, it was a lot for him. You know, my parents were married for 50 plus years, and I just saw him emotionally start to check out. He was drained. Caring for somebody battling cancer is, it's not an easy task. And I'm still trying to figure out what grief feels like. My son is battling depression because of his best friend. I don't even know if I feel anymore. I'm just feeling numb. And I'm running a business. I'm like, I have to show up. That's my livelihood, right? And so I flew back and forth to New York and LA to help my dad and just give him some relief so that I could be there. And the last time that I was there, it was it was my mom's birthday. She had turned, I can't remember exactly because I feel like I blocked some of those memories, but she turned 71, I think. She was 71 when she passed. And I always would host a birthday party and I would try to make a surprise and invite all her friends. And she called me and she said, you know what? She's like, don't come. I'm not feeling well. She's like, don't plan anything. I don't want to see anybody. And I said, well, that's not an option. I'm coming. It's, you know, on a week off is what I was doing with my dad. So literally every other week I'd fly back and forth because I would have to get home to New York to maintain my life there. And I flew in the day of the morning of her birthday. And I think I landed like, it was early. It was like mid morning. And I had already set up the caterer. I had already sent out invites to her closest lifelong friends, to her family, to the elders of our family. And I didn't tell my mom or my dad. And I called my dad when I landed and I said, just clear out the dining room table and put everything in the garage. That's it. And then I said, make sure that I knew my dad always had like those ice coolers. I said, pull the ice coolers out and just have them open. He goes, what are you doing? I said, when I pull up, I have a rental car. I said, just come out and help me unload. So I had it fully catered, all my mom's favorites, her favorite ice cream cake, which is why I needed the cooler, and bags of ice and drinks and wine and all my mom's favorites and party hats and festive plates and just things to make it easy because I was traveling, obviously, and my mom, she couldn't, she at this point was bedridden. And I walked in and she was sad. She was crying. She knew her time was coming. Mm-hmm. And I threw her the most beautiful farewell. And I will never regret going against her wishes because through the course of the day, we had like, I don't know, 40, 50-ish people make the rounds. And I made it all day. And I said, so long as she can handle it, everybody can come in, eat in the living room, and then say their goodbyes in her bedroom.
Wow. And
it was the most powerful day. Like, whew, gets very emotional. And at the end of it, she was exhausted, obviously. And she said, thank you. She's like, I got to see everybody. And I didn't think I would have the opportunity to say goodbye. So I spent the next couple of days with her going through the process of, and I know there's a certain culture that does this, but we together went through all of the mementos and the important things to her. And I went and bought these gorgeous, large bags, decorative bags, like sturdy ones. I can't remember where I got them, but I bought like 40 of them. And she said, okay, open my closet, open the china cabinet, open this. And she's like, that goes to this person. So I sat there and I hand wrapped and she wrote cards and notes and we put them in the bag. I labeled them and we just left them sitting in the living room. And she said, when the time comes, you deliver each one to each person, letting them know that I selected this. And to me, that was so powerful that she had the strength and the courage to do that.
Yeah.
She passed 2 weeks later. Mm-hmm. And it was the biggest loss of my life. She was my best friend. It's been 7 years and it feels like it was yesterday. The grief was overwhelming at that point. And I won't go too deep into this, but I was involved in a very toxic marriage. And the day after my mom's funeral, I got the courage to file for a divorce. So not only now am I dealing with the grief of my best friend, my son's best friend, my mom, but now I'm like fighting to get out of this marriage. And fortunately I did. I'm here. I'm alive. I'm like, I made it out safely. But it was not a safe situation. So I never shared that with my parents. I kept it a secret. And so not a lot of people knew what I was going through behind the scenes. So that was a fight of my life. And when I got out, I was just so thankful. And after my mom passed and seeing that slow painful death, I was angry at God. Mm-hmm. I was so angry. And I wanted nothing to do with religion or church or, and I'm very faith-based. My parents are very faith-based. Mm-hmm. And so I started my healing journey by reaching out for resources. Mm-hmm. And I started finding, I found in New York City, there is a Gilda Ratner who died of cancer. She has a facility in the city that is for cancer survivors, and it is 100% free. And they run classes 6 days a week, morning till night. And depending on where you are with your journey is where you enter. They just meet you right where you are. So I probably did that for maybe a year. And then I decided, okay, I'm ready to find a different way to heal, because then I started to hold on to other people's grief for them. And I knew that wasn't healthy for me. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I forced myself to put myself back out in the world. And really, I threw all my effort, energy into my business. And I would fly back to California and spend time with my dad. And my dad was lost, lonely, sad, and trying to get him, you know, back, like, how to do the basics. He didn't know how to wash his clothes or even turn on the oven. And I would have FaceTimes with him like 3-4 times a day teaching him. And so I finally said, you know what, I'm going to pre-order all of your food, your groceries, and just help you with this process. And I'll get people to come in that can, you know, clean the house. And very old school, very stubborn. We had many arguments. And he's like, we're not hiring a stranger to come in and do what your mom used to do. And so then he started to have, I call them the casserole committee. You know, they lived in a retirement community. Mm-hmm. And so all my mom's friends and the neighbors would start to show up with food. And my dad would call me, they don't know how to season. They use too much salt. I'm like, Dad, be grateful you have a home cooked meal right now. So mm-hmm. I would fly in and I couldn't bring myself to go into the house.
Wow.
Because that's where mom passed. And so I would tell my dad, okay, meet me here. And we would do staycations all over the place and check into hotels. And we would just have this amazing bonding experience. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, eventually you're going to have to come into the house. Mm-hmm. And I said, nope, don't have to. I said, I'm pre-ordering your food. I'm finding friends that can cook for you. And I even called the grocery store and I said, you guys need to offer Instacart, and they didn't have it. So I got that grocery store in his neighborhood to offer Instacart when it wasn't, you know, major cities, they have it, but he's like a rural location, like outside of LA. And he's like, no, we don't have it. So I kept calling the grocery store manager. I'm like, you really need to do this. And I explained, and he said, thank you for sharing. He's like, I'm going to request that we add it right away. And they had it within a week. So, it was like, you have to figure out and navigate, you know, how to keep in loss, like we're all grieving, but how do you keep the person living their life without that many hiccups in it? So that they feel normal, just any sense of normalcy at that point. It was this massive void. And so I did my best, and I would send my dad all kinds of funny things and books, and taught him how to use Facebook, taught him how to text. We did so many things that were really bonding for us as we were both grieving my mom. Mm-hmm. And at this point I thought, okay, I think I'm starting to understand that grief doesn't have an end date. It's going to be forever. But how we navigate it is telling of how we're healing and if we're self-caring. And at that point, I realized I'd stopped self-caring. And I had to write notes to myself, take a shower today, go outside today. Mm-hmm. Because for days, I wouldn't shower after my mom passed. For weeks, I wouldn't leave my apartment in New York City. I could hear the sounds of the city, but I wouldn't step foot outside. Mm-hmm. So I had to really navigate what that new life was going to be. Sorry that I turned my phone off. And once I started to realize my mom wouldn't want me to live this way. Mm-hmm. My best friend wouldn't want me to live this way. I really started to put myself out there to grow my business. Mm-hmm. I remember going to this amazing networking event. I got on the list. It was like this big entrepreneur I looked up to, and I've been trying to penetrate that circle of people in that field in New York, and he owned a big agency. And I'll never forget when the invite came in to a large event he was hosting in his office by invite only, and I made the cut. And I got all dressed up, and I'm like, finally, I feel a little bit of normalcy again. And I went to the event. I networked. There was probably like 200 people there. It was a great night out. And I don't know if you're familiar with New York City, but like that city just really doesn't sleep. So, and if I was out in the thick of it, like I would just go with the flow. I would be out. I would network. I would like do all the things to help grow my business. And I finally, for the first time, I felt like I was getting my footing back. And I'm like, okay, the grief can come in bits and pieces, but I really have the option to control how much it affects me. If it takes me out completely, I know I'm not going to live that way. And so and I'm living all my own, you know, I'd gone through the separation and all of that. And 3 days later, we went, New York City went on lockdown after that event. And that was the start of the pandemic. And so I'm like, okay, I can handle the 14-day stay home.
Yes.
I had just stayed home for, you know, quite a long time with the grief of my mom. And I'm like, I can do this. And, you know, as the days continued and the lockdown continued, I was March, April, May. I was almost 4 months into the pandemic in New York, and I knew it was going to move its way west. And I said, I can't have my dad be by himself. There's no way with, and my dad said, don't be silly. It's not coming to Los Angeles. He said, you live in the biggest city in the world. You guys are like the guinea pigs. I go, no, dad, it's coming. I go, it's going to make its way across the country. It's coming. And I go, what would you prefer? Would you prefer, I said, I'll rent a house temporarily because I still hadn't been to the house where my mom passed. So I said, I will get a house near you so you can just come over. You can stay with me. We, you know, I'll cook. We had all these great activities we were planning. And I said, or do you want me to get like a really big house and you move with me? Without hesitation, he said, get a really big house. I'm ready to move out of this house too. And so my goal, and I couldn't tell him this because he doesn't like cold weather, but my goal was to move him back to New York City after things started to open up. I said, whether that's 3 months or a year, I own my own business. Things were really starting to really take off at this point. And I said, okay. I said, so I sight unseen, I went and I leased an amazing home, huge swimming pool, backyard. My dad's quarters were on the front side. My quarters were on the flip side of the house. There was room, guest rooms, if we wanted to have company or family come and stay. And so I signed a lease for 6 months with the option to extend. And I was picking up the keys on July 1st. So July 1st, 2020. And my dad had been complaining during the pandemic. And I said, do me a favor. I said, listen to me and don't do anything silly because the last place I need you to end up is the hospital. Mm-hmm. So one of the casserole committees brought him something that didn't agree with him, caused him to have a gallbladder attack, which technically, you know, you can live with or without your gallbladder. So he went in, he was in the hospital for a couple of nights and I couldn't come to see him. One, New York was impossible to fly out of during the pandemic. All airports were shut down to us. Like they really made it a challenge. Whereas before, you know, there were 17 flights a day to get out of New York City into any major city. And so I was a direct JFK to LAX. I could fly that flight 17 times a day if I wanted. Every time I wanted, I can get to the airport and get on a plane. At this season, there was two flights a week. That was it. And so I told my dad, I said, and the hospitals are going to be shut down, so I can't come in with you. And he got released and he had a home nurse come and see him twice a day. So it gave me like a peace of mind. And I said, but you know, rumor is New York's going to open. I can get on a flight and then I can be there for July 1st. Our open date was like July 23rd or something. So I wanted to give it a week before I got on a plane. I listened to all the rules in New York. It was brutal. Talk about, you know, going through something that was so life-changing for all of us. I don't want to take credit, but I feel like New York got the worst of it. So many places that did, but I feel like we really, it was brutal. You know, we not only were on lockdown, we were on curfew. There was no transportation. I don't own a car in New York City. There is Uber, subways, buses. There's no transportation after dusk. It was riots. They say it was peaceful protest. It was not. It was riots. We were scared for our life. The looting that was just happening all around us on the block. You walked even to go to the grocery store and you did not feel safe. So, like I was living in a war zone, and that really was compromising everything. I had massive anxiety. If you're familiar with New York, I lived across the street from Trump Tower. So that comes with a whole other set of anxiety, the bomb squad 24/7, because that's where Trump's family lived. The street was blocked off for a 3-block radius, just for the CIA and all of the you know, service. So I was already at a heightened anxiety, add grief, now add the pandemic, and now add trying to get back to California to help my dad. So I was so looking forward to July 1st. I was starting to figure out what I'm going to take, you know, what I'm going to leave in New York, what I'm going to take. I'm going to ship a couple boxes, just my work stuff. And I have 2 animals. So I'm like, okay, how am I going to get my animals there? And so my dad calls me and he says, I'm going to have my gallbladder removed. And I said, no, you're not. I have power of attorney. I have advanced medical directive, not because of he was ill, but because of what we went through with my mom. My mom, both my parents gave me the rights over their lives. I feel everybody has to do that. And so I said, Dad, I said, no, you will not. And he said, yeah, I'm going to do it. I said, well, I have final say in this. He goes, I'm of sound mind. I have final say. So we figured over this for probably 2 days. I got the surgery date and everything inside of me welled up. And I said, no, I'm very much an intuitive. And I said, no, I don't like the numbers. I don't like, I've studied numerology. I'm like, I don't like anything about this. He said, we have to do it because the rumor is the California is going on a lockdown and the operating rooms will be closed. And I don't want to end up back in the hospital, even though it was like an easy thing. And we had a home nurse at this point. He's like, I'm going to do it. So I spoke to him the morning of June 23rd. He was walking into the hospital and I'm 7 days away from coming to LA. And we said our typical rapid fire business conversation. I love you, that you're going to be great. This is going to go safe. This doctor has performed 2 hernia surgeries on him. And I was told it was outpatient. He would be released and home within 6 to 8 hours. And the nurse was picking him up and he was going to stay with him. The male nurse was going to stay with him. He's like, he wouldn't be able to walk for a few days. So I'm like, by the time I come in, I start getting settled, stocking the kitchen, and then picking up my dad to come move in with me. And then I'll deal with the house after the fact. I had to get my dad out of the house in order to start to like move things out was my plan, clean it up, see what we need to do to position it to it was something in the past that was difficult for both of us. I started calling the hospital and I'm not getting any responses. In about 12 to 15 hours, I can't remember, his surgeon who knows me from telehealth calls me. And he says, how soon can you get here? And I said, what do you mean? How soon can I get there? You know, I'm arriving in 1 week. He said, no, I need you to get here ASAP. And I said, tell me what happened. He goes, he's in ICU, but I would like you to be here. And that's it. That's all he told me. Wow. The next day there was two flights. I was on that first morning flight. It was that day of the week that JFK had the flight to LA. There was maybe 7 or 8 people on the flight. New York is still technically on lockdown. We're at phase one of opening, which was drugstores, like CVS's, Rite Aid's. And I think that was it. There was something else I think that opened up. But so we're pretty much still on lockdown, but now we can go to the convenience store, not just a grocery store. So I can't think straight. I grab my work bag and that's all I took. I am literally in workout clothes, tennis shoes, bag of masks, and that's it. And I'm like, okay. And thankfully I have, you know, very close friends in New York that could take care of my animals. And they were like, just go to the airport. So I land, drive to the hospital, and immediately they let me in. And I'm smart enough to know if they're letting me in a hospital where there's no visitors allowed, that it's got to be an end of life visit. Mm-hmm. And so immediately I am asking everybody, is this an end of life? And they said, we don't know. So I got there and my dad was still coherent. He was in ICU, but he could squeeze my hand. He recognized my presence, my voice. And I had some other family there with me. And we just sat there until they said, okay, they're like, tomorrow we'll let you back in. Mm-hmm. His vitals started to go up. He started to acknowledge, you know, and that's what the doctor, I was texting with his surgeon. And he said, this is why we wanted you to get here. And so I said, what time tomorrow can I come to your office? And he said, well, you can't come right now because we're starting to close down things because the pandemic is moving towards California. And there's rumors we're going to go on lockdown. And I said, no, I am coming to sit down with you face to face and you will tell me what happened. This was an outpatient procedure and my dad is now in ICU and I need to know the next steps. So he agreed to meet me. He goes, technically you are the advanced medical directive, power of attorney. So he's like, you can come in. So I went to his office and I met with him. Mm-hmm. And during the surgery, he looked at me underneath his mask and his eyes just streaming with tears. He told me he accidentally severed an artery and that's what caused my dad to go into ICU. And he said, the recovery from this will be extensive if he recovers. And so I started looking at, he's like, we can put him into a home where they will take care of him 24/7. I said, never will I do that to my dad. He entrusted me with this. I will never do that. So I said, you know what? I just rented this really big house. I have quarters for a nurse. I will hire a nurse and move them into the house. And my whole life flipped upside down like that. Mm-hmm. And in my head, I started planning. I was on the phone. I was calling every service that they gave me, like stacks of people to call, right? Mm-hmm. And I spent probably the next 3 days on the phone. I went back to the hospital to go see him the following day. He was improving and things were looking up. And then I think on the fourth day, they wouldn't allow me in because the hospitals got shut down completely, even if it was end of life. Wow. And I said, okay, that's fine. If you're not letting me in, he must be improving. And on that evening, he took a turn for the worse. And the next morning, the doctor on duty and the charge nurse and the surgeon all called me back to back to back. And they mm-hmm. said, get here right away. Mm-hmm. And I said, is this what I think it is? And they said, it's up to you. And they said, at this point we had turned up. And I didn't even know some of the terminology because I'm not in the medical field. but they had turned up the ventilator.
Yeah. Okay.
So it was like up at like 80-90%, and they had turned up the paralytic, the drip, to pull him out of the pain. And so when my mom passed, my dad and I re-signed because first it was a document with, I was in charge of both of them. And then we re-signed a new document, but during the pandemic, my dad misplaced it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how or why. So I called a paralegal. She did it through the window of the house. She signed it outside. She left on the door. My dad picked it up. He signed it, and she had all the tabs. You know what a advanced medical directive and power looks like, right? It's like several hundred pages. My dad signed every page but one. His final wish signed. So that's why all three of the two doctors and the nurse called me, because they were going through his final wishes. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't signed or checked. That's the only page out of, I think it was 360 something pages. I found it and I have it. And I did the right thing. Mm-hmm. But for the longest time, I didn't know if I did. So I walked in and I said, what are we dealing with? And they gave me the list of what was happening with him. And they said, but look at this. And they opened the documents, and I had my copy in my, I did grab that and travel with it. And so I had my copy, and I flipped to my page, and neither one of them, because one, you know, was a copy, and then we had to have them notarized. Mm-hmm. And I broke down. Mm-hmm. I'm across from the COVID wing. So you see the red hazard, right? And I'm like, I did everything right during the pandemic. I did everything they asked me to do in New York City. And I'm looking at the COVID wing, and I'm looking at the ICU, and all the beds are full. I had a massive anxiety attack. I had two masks on and a face shield, because that's what they required, two pairs of gloves. I was completely in, it's California summers are very hot, and where this area is, it's in the desert. It was like 116 degrees that day. And so now I'm in the hospital, and I'm literally layering my clothes to walk into this room. So I had a full-on panic attack, and I started to see stars, and I literally just, I almost fainted. I was sitting on the floor of the corridor in between ICU and COVID wing, and the respiratory therapist came out and gave me some oxygen. He said, when was the last time you ate? I'm like, 2 days ago. I don't know. They got me some crackers and some water. Somebody gave me a little bit of a protein drink, and I just sat there sobbing, and just everything was running out of my nose. I couldn't catch my breath. I was coughing. I felt like I had the elephant on my chest, and I suffered from those anxiety attacks, when my mom was dying. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden it's back, and I'm like, how is this my reality? And I sat there feeling like I was hopeless. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, my faith came back to me. And I got a message. I believe it was a God moment. And I got a message. This isn't how your parents raised you. This is not who my dad, he always wanted to raise a son. And so he was very hard on me, but loving. And he always told me, you can do anything you ever want in this lifetime, but you have to know that you have to think it up here and believe it. Mm-hmm. And he's such a strong proponent of sharing like strong mindset practices with me from when I was a very, very young girl, mm-hmm. probably like 7 or 8. And he would give me homework on these psychology books when I was like 10 years old. I would have to stand on the table and recite a book report to him. So all of a sudden, all of that came rushing back. I took off all my masks. I wiped my face down. And I walked right back into ICU, and I said, let me see the documents. And I looked at my dad. I called a family elder. I said, I need to run this by somebody in my family. I don't want to be the, I just needed that guidance, that support. And he said, you're making the right decision. So I signed it, and they asked me, they're like, do you want this to go fast or slow? I'm like, I get a choice in this matter. They said, yeah, you do. I didn't know what to pick. And I said, do what is going to be the least amount of pain. I don't want to see him suffer anymore. He had already been suffering. He was having seizures and organ failure and whatever is going to make this painless for him. In that very moment, I was the only one in the room. And I said, I'm not going to let my dad transition this way. And I had a lot of family that lived in the surrounding area of the hospital. I got my phone and my dad's phone, and I texted everybody. I said, get here ASAP. They did. Security at the hospital would not allow anyone up. So I walked down to security and I said, if this was your father's end of life moment, how would you want it to happen? And he said, I can't let them in. I said, okay. So I went to the back door, the stairwell, and I brought everybody in through the back stairwell and in the room, closed the blinds. And I walked in and I just took charge. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm fine. I know how to take charge. And this was a moment that I knew that God was leading me. And I there was 11 of us surrounding my dad's bed, holding hands. And then I got my dad's phone and I FaceTimed his brother, a couple of my aunts and some of my dad's lifelong friends. And they on FaceTime got to say goodbye to him as well. And from that moment that I signed the piece of paper till the moment he passed away, it was probably about 5.5 hours gone by. And so I hijacked the nursing station sound system. I put on my mom's favorite playlist, and my dad transitioned to a quiet room of all of us singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, holding hands, by his side, rubbing him the whole time, massaging his arms and just letting him know we were there. And it was okay. My mom's moment changed me forever. This instilled the most strength in me I have ever felt in my life. And from that moment, I knew that God put a bigger calling on my heart. Oh, did I lose you?
No.
I knew I couldn't let the grief overcome me any longer.
Wow.
And I have actively pursued grief therapy with somebody who specializes in that. I have actively done the things, put the things in place to carry on my parents' legacy. I have actively shifted my mindset from loss to how would they want me to live my life? And I couldn't do it on the first, second, third loss, but my dad's loss really hit home. And I'm an only child. So I struggled with feeling like I was, I'm a grown woman, but I struggled with feeling like I was, I don't like to say the word orphan, but a lone ranger in life. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, my family unit is gone, my best friend. And I'm like, how do you overcome this? So I am 3 years out from my dad, and a lot has transpired, and I couldn't be more excited for the journey that I'm on and how they let me know every day that they're surrounding me. And as we've been talking, the light over my mom's urn has been flickering, communicates with me. And, you know, planning 2 funerals and honoring their memory and their legacy is something that I do every day.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Wow.
I can never get through that story without crying.
No, that's okay. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing not only your story, but also just the things that helped you or the things that you had to struggle through. So sharing our stories is so important. I loved how you shared about saying goodbye. It kind of struck me with your first, with your best friend and your son's best friend, there wasn't that long or that time to say goodbye, which is very hard when we don't get that time. But with your mom and your dad, you got those times. to say goodbye and to involve. And I love how you involve community. We don't grieve alone. We need people that surround us. And so that was such an heart, such an encouraging when we can reach out. And I love your mom's momentums, right? And the birthday party, right? Like, that's amazing that she got to say goodbye, because saying goodbye is so important, right? Saying those things. Loss is hard. And when we lose something, someone, it's terrible, but saying goodbye helps us, right? Put an end to the, maybe that pain, knowing we're going to lose them, but keeping the memories alive. Yeah.
I think it's the closure. I feel like we all need that closure and getting that moment to let them know. And, you know, they know, but honor and respect. I mean, that is a transition, and to be there in that moment.
It's maybe the hardest moment in your lives, because I was there when my mom and dad passed away too. And it's the hardest moment, but it's that moment we wouldn't have missed for anything. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's an honor.
It's an honor.
Yeah. Honor. Yeah.
Awesome. You did talk a little bit about grief resources. And so sharing our story is one thing. You also said you went through some different groups. What was the most helpful maybe resource that helped you?
Knowing I wasn't all alone, mm-hmm. and seeing that other people were struggling and not knowing how to walk through grief made me feel like I'm not all alone going through this. And hearing the stories of their loved ones really inspired me to live my life, like a very big life in my eyes, like the way I want to live it. And I have these, and I gifted these to everybody that I love. You know, they're simple. I have them all over as my reminder that time waits for no one. Because that morning when my dad walked into the hospital, and I thought I would be talking to him that evening. And so every time I flip this, I will just sit in quietness and reflect on my parents, because we're supposed to go on in life. And we're not supposed to stay stuck, but grief is always going to be there. You know, we're always going to miss them and love them and wish they were here, but there's a reason. And if you start to embrace that you're not alone in this path, it helps to heal your heart a little bit.
Yeah. I love that. And again, that you're not alone. And there are tools, and that's why we love what we do, is because there's things that help you not ever get over the loss, but help you kind of complete things, and you can move on, right, from some of that pain that's attached. Loss is an emotional, grief is emotional, and our response is unique, right? And I love, like, you shared your response, like, again, sometimes not even going out of the house. We have that emotional response. We have eating. We don't eat. We don't sleep.
Yeah.
Those are all natural responses to grief. And when we can kind of embrace that and move on, that's great. Just one more question, Monica. What tidbit or what thing would you want to share with somebody who's experiencing grief that you want to share? What key?
Oh, gosh. I recently had a cousin who passed away, and I'm chatting with her daughter quite a lot right now, my second cousin. And some of the things that I have given her is just honor the process of what grief is and lean into it. You're going to have really, really, really bad days, and just respect that. It's okay, but you do have to get up the next day, and you do have to go on with your life, and honor them. I mean, I still celebrate my parents' birthdays, and I still acknowledge, you know, things that we used to do, and now it's just differently that I'm able to do it. So honoring, you know, who they were as well, and remembering them is a great thing. I keep a lot of mementos around. I have always a picture of my mom and dad together, and then I always have fresh flowers. Unless I'm traveling, I don't, but I mm-hmm. always have fresh flowers near, because mm-hmm. that's like a reminder to me of them. So do the little things that make you feel good, mm-hmm. and self-care. Self-care is number one during the grief mm-hmm. process. because so many of us tend to neglect our basic things, and it's not good for our health. This is our body, so we need to take care of it.
Thank you so much for sharing and being part of our Stories That Heal. And we just, I want to thank you for being vulnerable, for sharing with us, for helping and encourage other people. I know there will be many people who listen to this podcast and will be encouraged. So thank you so much for sharing yourself and being vulnerable. That was so good.
I appreciate you. Thank you
so much. So thank you for joining us on Grief Talk. I remember again, we're here every week. Come and join us, share. We're going to have more Stories That Heal this month. So please come and join us and just connect with us. And we'll see you next week. Thank you.